Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
I think if we turned a blind eye and say, well, I don't want to see any of those things, but then go pick up factory farm meat, there's where the divide is.
That's manager of the local Growers Guild, Megan Hutchison. She comes into the Earth Eats studios to talk about the Guild's new educational video series that illustrates, among other things, butchering a hog. We don't talk about that specifically, but rather the LGG's goals of educating aspiring farmers. Before that, when Congress enacted new Farm Bill legislation on January 1st, it cut virtually all funding for organic agriculture programs. According to Harvest Public Media, that doesn't sit well with many organic farmers. Then in the kitchen, Chef Daniel Orr fires up the oven to do some roasting on a chilly day. Stay with us. Mia Partlow brings us news headlines at the top of each show. Welcome.
Three stories from the Foodie Newswires this week, Annie. The residents of Nitro, West Virginia, may not breathe any easier than they did 2 weeks ago, but hopefully they feel better after receiving a $93 million settlement from agribusiness giant Monsanto. The plaintiffs of the class action lawsuit argued that Monsanto had polluted their community by burning waste from the production of Agent Orange, the defoliant famously used as part of the United States chemical warfare program during the Vietnam War. The production of Agent Orange creates dioxin as a chemical byproduct, and dioxin has been linked to cancer, birth defects, learning disabilities, endometriosis, infertility, and suppressed immune functions. The $93 million settlement includes a budget of $84 million for healthcare monitoring and $9 million to clean up 4,500 homes, in addition to the payment of plaintiffs' legal fees. When it comes to food-related illnesses, produce is more to blame than meat. A new report from the Centers for Disease Control found that every year, 1 in 6 people falls ill from foodborne bacteria. 46% of those illnesses are caused by fruits, vegetables, and nuts. And it's leafy vegetables like spinach that dominate food-based illnesses, causing 23% of all sicknesses. Norovirus is mostly to blame, transferred onto leafy vegetables through water contaminated by fecal matter. But the CDC isn't trying to get people to stop eating vegetables. They say that when properly cleaned, produce is safe to eat. And in junk food news, it appears as though the Twinkie will live on. Hostess Brands chose lead bidders for Twinkies and 5 other bakeries late Wednesday. C. Dean Metropolis & Company and Apollo Global Management LLC together offered $410 million for the brand of spongy yellow cakes. Hostess has said they want to get a buyer quickly, before the brand memory fades from the public's mind. The company filed for bankruptcy in November of last year. Hostess Brands also includes Drake's Cakes and Wonder Bread, both of which were sold this week. McKee Foods, best known for its Little Debbie cakes, offered $27.5 million for Drake's. You can read more about these three stories and many others on our website, eartheats.org. And join us on Facebook and Twitter for food news throughout the day. Just search for Earth Eats.
Speaking of Twitter, we're on the cusp of 200,000 followers, so we're holding a series of giveaways of books we've collected over the years as a thank you to all our supporters. Find out details on our Twitter feed and by searching #200kgiveaway. Anyway, Mia Partlow, we appreciate the news.
My pleasure. See you next week.
Do you like to buy organic food? Well, it may get a little harder to find affordable organic products in the coming months. That's because when Congress enacted new Farm Bill legislation on January 1st, it cut virtually all funding for organic agriculture programs while retaining billions in subsidies that largely benefit conventional farms. As Harvest Public Media's Abby Fentress Swanson reports, that's not sitting well with organic farmers.
Not far from the banks of the Missouri River, farmer Liz Graznick shakes organic grain into stainless steel metal bins. Her 5 dozen chickens come running through melted snow for the feed. These chickens have been certified organic by the U.S. Department of Agriculture for the past 4 years, as have the vegetables grown here on Happy Hollow Farm in Jamestown, Missouri. But this year, Graznick says she may not be able to afford the fee she has to pay to get certified as organic.
My certification costs on an annual basis are close to $800. that would be really foolish of me to pay that and not get any cost share money back.
When she says cost share money, Graznick's talking about a USDA program that reimbursed farmers for some of their certification costs. It was an organic farm subsidy that, up until January, was funded by the Farm Bill. Congress couldn't come to an agreement on a new farm bill, so, as a stopgap measure, lawmakers extended parts of the bill that expired in September. The $22 million organic certification cost share program was one of many Congress chose to cut. But killing that subsidy will have a major impact. Last year, more than 9,300 certified organic operations took advantage of cost share funding. Now, Graznick and those other farmers will have to pay out of pocket if they want to continue to sell with the USDA organic seal.
It is important, but it's also $800, where I'm not making any money. It's really hard.
What would you be, say, spending that money on instead?
Electric bills. My mortgage payment for a month.
Without cost share, Graznick says she may not recertify her farm organic this year, even though she'll use the same organic practices. She doesn't think she'll lose her regular customers who buy directly from the farm or at the local farmer's market. But without the organic seal, Graznick does worry about losing future customers, and that could definitely hurt her bottom line. The cost share program wasn't the only organic program that didn't get its funding extended. Lawmakers cut $20 million worth of annual organic agriculture research and a $5 million program for organic data collection. With Washington's recent focus on belt tightening, it's no surprise that lawmakers cut farm bill programs. But after cutting virtually all the support for organic farmers, Congress didn't touch crop insurance or the direct payment program that pays $5 billion annually to farms that grow major commodity crops. Only a small percentage of organic farms qualify for these subsidies. Organic vegetable grower Dan Kibler says that makes him feel unfairly targeted.
It's like, why aren't we all just created equal? You know, that's what America's about. And so let's just do that, you know, in our policy. I don't want to have a battle with the big growers. You know, I don't want to deny them what they need. But I just want it to be fair.
There are more than 17,000 certified organic operations in the U.S., up from 7,000 a decade ago. With the number of total farmers declining nationwide, the growing organic sector represents a bright spot for rural America. Again, here's farmer Dan Kibler.
They hire people. They're purchasing things. They're making a living at it. And there's a big opportunity to revive and revitalize rural economies.
Cutting organic programs from the farm bill won't mean organic food disappears from grocery stores and farmers' markets. And there's no guarantee that these subsidies won't come back once lawmakers hammer out long-term agriculture policy, which they'll try to do in the coming months. But for now, at least, the cuts will make it harder for organic farms to stay in business. Rick Bowler has run an organic grain and cattle farm in Lebanon, Kansas for about 20 years. He says even experienced organic farmers count on farm bill funds.
We're dependent on whether we can get enough income from the farm and if there's any help or not, and how good the insurance levels are and everything else, just like conventional people are.
Without farm bill support, organic farmers have an even tougher row to hoe, and so do shoppers looking to buy organic food. Abby Fencher-Swanson, Harvest Public Media.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. Last week, Megan Hutchison of the Local Growers Guild spoke about issues important to small Indiana farmers, like the Farm Bill and the possibility of a food hub as a way of expanding the reach of local food in our community. Today, she talks about the LGG's mission to educate aspiring growers. Recently, the Guild held a webinar with the organic faculty team at Purdue University, during which they spoke with area farmers about pest control. Hutchison knows about the difficulties of managing pests organically. She's a farmer herself on Sunny Branch Farm. So let's talk about pests that you're dealing with right now. I mean, we had a drought and then suddenly we had 4 inches of rain over 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Are you dealing with pests right now in your fields?
Oh, yes. We did have aphids all over our kale this year and Brussels sprouts. So that's always a problem, and the potato beetle decimated my potatoes. So, you do what you can, and you be diligent about picking slugs off, and you know, planting your marigolds and garlic and stinky herbs, do some companion planting to help that.
It must be so helpful to be in the field, to be farming yourself, and to have this position at the local Growers Guild.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it was natural for me. I think one of the reasons I had gotten involved with the guild because I was searching out support. You know, one of the wonderful things about this community is you can really easily find yourself around folks that know more than you. So I hung out at the community orchard a lot and with Michael Simmons and other farmers that knew more than me. And I see that potential in the guild to provide that space too.
So let's now talk about the educational aspects of the things you guys do. You have a new video series on the web. Let's see if I can pull it up. LGG on the Farm. It's a series of videos that are posted on Vimeo, and it looks like how-tos and interviews with farmers about certain topics that they're experts in.
Yeah.
But I'd love to talk about the one from We Farm with Chef Jake Francis. It's on hog butchering.
Yes.
What do we see in this video?
That was an interesting video. So the LGG hired 5 interns, telecommunications interns from IU, to do some videos with us over the summer. And Josh Eganoff from We Farm came to us and said, I'd like to try something different. You know, I work a lot with the chefs in town and I sell meat to them. And there's sort of a need for chef training in butchering. And so we wanted to highlight sort of the relationship between the grower and the chefs and also what the chefs are getting out of that. So Josh and Alan Zimmerman from Blooming Foods set something up and they invited their friend in to butcher a hog in front of some other kind of aspiring chefs and cooks.
It's a 25-minute video. Do you see every part of the butchering process?
It would be a super long video if we shared the whole thing.
I know some consumers out there would say, you know, I don't need to see that. Talk to those consumers.
Well, I think that's okay. I always say I eat happy meat. So I don't necessarily have to see it every time either. But I think it's important to ask questions of your grower at the market and or, you know, at their farm stand. So as long as they're getting that information and knowing where their food comes from, that's the important part. Ask what were the living conditions? What do your hogs eat? Are they on pasture? Those kinds of questions are important. You know, I think if we turn a blind eye and say, well, I don't want to see any of those things, but then go pick up factory farm meat, then there's where the divide is.
What other questions do you like to hear at the farmers market from consumers?
I think it's good to ask, you know, what if you're talking about vegetables, you know, you're going to ask questions about, you know, do you spray with herbicides and pesticides or how often do you do that? And you might ask even about the sort of safety issues. For example, if you're buying raw milk, you know, how many cows do you have?
What sort of information is that question going to give me about my raw milk?
Well, I think when a lot of people talk about raw milk and the safety issues with it, a lot of the concerns comes from the perspective of scale. So when you have a lot of cows, you have a lot of manure, a lot of chance for contamination. But when you have 2 cows, things are a little bit different.
Got it. Well, let's just end this by talking about what the future holds for the local Growers Guild. What are you guys working on right now and into the future?
We actually have a couple things coming up. On March 30th, the LGG is hosting our first Bike to Barns event.
Describe that.
Well, folks can choose from a 6-mile urban fruit route, a 35-mile seed route to Brown County, and a 70-mile root route to Owen County.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So folks can ride their bikes to the farms, ask questions of the grower, get to know a goat, and then go to the next farm. So it's a way for the community to learn about local food, participate in a healthy activity. And then we also have the Small Farm Conference coming up on March 1st and 2nd. And that's in Danville, Indiana. And if there are any growers or aspiring growers out there who don't have the money to attend. It's $150. The LGG does have a limited number of scholarships available.
That's excellent. A lot of great stuff. Megan Hutchison, manager of the Local Growers Guild, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks.
You can find out more about upcoming activities through the Local Growers Guild on their website, localgrowers.org, and listen to my complete conversation with Megan Hutchison on our website, eartheats.org. Coming up...
It's got a real velvety texture and kind of a caramelized, a light caramel color to it. Smokiness of the bacon, pepperiness, and then there's nice fresh herbs.
The bacon serves as the wrapping paper, basically, for our bunch of roasted garlic. So heat up your oven and get ready to do some roasting in the second half of our show. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Straight to the kitchen now with Chef Daniel Orr. He's an avid gardener, so a lot of the ingredients he uses in our recipes comes from his home in Columbus, Indiana. Our two recipes today use ingredients he harvested several months ago, so chances are you won't be making these recipes with fresh ingredients right now. But now is the time for gardeners to start thinking about what to plant. One of our Twitter followers says she always plants a pizza garden with garlic, tomatoes, and basil. We're not making pizza today, but those do happen to be some of the ingredients for these two dishes. Chef Orr starts off with his favorite of the lot, garlic.
You can see there's two basic types of garlic. There's hard neck and soft neck. And the soft necks are the ones that you see braided. And, you know, they're very pretty to hang. They've got a nice flavor, but they don't last quite as long as the hard neck, and that's what we've got here. And these are ones that store a little bit better. So the ones in the grocery store are usually hard neck. But I wanted to also talk about a little bit about how garlic reproduces. And you can see here that the head of garlic here has the cloves in it, and you could plant those in the fall. All winter long, they kind of start to grow, and then in the spring, they'll come up in your garden. Then you usually harvest them around June or July. And you can do that pretty much with any garlic. But the garlic, some of these garlics have these hard little nubs that look a little bit like hazelnuts. And those grow on the outside. And when you pull the garlic out of the ground, a lot of times these will stay in the ground. And that's another way they reproduce themselves. And then you have a third way, and that's when the garlic grows a scape. And we've talked about the garlic scape before, and we've made the garlic scape salt in an earlier episode. But if you leave those scapes on the plant, they'll create some little flower heads that look kind of like little fireworks, and then they'll create these little seed pods, which when you crack open, you can see there's more little reproductive systems of the garlic plant. And these fall on the ground, and they'll create garlic. So garlic is a really hardy plant, and it's one of our favorites here at Earth Eats. Today what we're going to do is do some roasted garlic, which is one of the simplest preparations, one of the earliest preparations of garlic. And we're just going to cut off about the top third. Okay, so it's just kind of like the little cap on top. It looks like a little elf cap a little bit. And you're just going to cut that off. And then we're going to take a little square of foil, put the garlic on there, and we've got some nice bacon. We're using some local peppered bacon. I'll put that down below the garlic, and we're going to season it with a little bit of salt and pepper. And then we're going to take a little bit of olive oil and put that on top. And you can be as creative as you want to. I mean, this is a very simple way, but then we could also, if you have some fresh oregano out of the garden, we can pull off a few leaves there and put those on top. And then we're just going to simply wrap the whole thing like a little package, little bacon and garlic package. I mean, that's the perfect present, right? And you can make a bunch of those and just put them in a pan like this. We've got an old metal skillet that we use for roasting the garlic. And then we pop it in the oven and let it cook for about 45 minutes. And then you can test one by opening it up and squeezing it out. I've got one right here that we've already done. And you can see when it's done, it's gotten all nice and brown. You can smell that. I wish we had smell-o-vision or whatever. And what I like to do is just serve it like this, just on a plate, with some of Grandma's biscuits, of course. And let me break you off a little bit of this.
If you insist.
We'll open this up and just squeeze. Look how you can squeeze the garlic right out of there.
So the garlic sort of turned a tan, a light brown.
Yeah, it's kind of it's got a real velvety texture and kind of a caramelized, a light caramel color to it. Smokiness of the bacon, pepperiness, and then those nice fresh herbs. And there you go. Have a bite of that and tell me what you think.
I mean, it's okay. It's delicious.
All right, and there's lots of ways you can use this garlic. You could add it to some butter and make a roasted garlic butter. You could smear that on sandwiches. You could use it in a sauce. So you could use it in a vinaigrette. And it has that very subtle garlic flavor. I mean, it's still pungent, but doesn't kick you in the teeth. And another thing about this is if you are a fireplace owner, you could also do this overnight in the fire. Build a nice fire when the fire dies down. Just kind of tuck these little aluminum packages next to the coals, and you'll have a wonderful roasted garlic in the morning to spread on your bagels.
Thank you. That was awesome. You have to try that. I was talking there to Aabon Binder, the guy taking photos for us in the kitchen. Check out the beautiful shots he captured of this dish and the next one. It's all at eartheats.org. Or connect with us on Flickr and see all of our food photos in one spot. Just search for Earth Eats. We're staring at the ingredients for our next recipe, and like a lot of times, we're sort of playing a guessing game with each other about what's on the menu.
We're sitting here trying to figure out what greens those are.
You can't tell? Yeah, there you go. Follow your nose.
Oh, why? That's weird looking basil.
All righty. We ready?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to do roasted tomatoes. Okay, and that sounds as simple as it is. So what we're going to do is we've got some Italian plum tomatoes, which are a little bit meatier. They have a little bit less seeds and less of the kind of the jelly inside the tomatoes.
But that's the good part.
That's what I love, yeah. But these are good for roasting because they're very meaty. Whereas if you were to roast some of the other heirloom varieties, they would fall apart because there's all that moisture in them. I'm just going to take 5 or 6 tomatoes, cut them into quarters, and then whatever else you have around. I love to put some fresh oregano, fresh basil, kind of those Tuscan-flavored herbs. And we're just going to chop those up finely. Take out most of the big stems. Then I'm going to grab a French knife, which is kind of the all-purpose knife.
What makes this French?
Because the French use it. If you are a amateur cook that really wants to invest in some good equipment, it's knives and pots and pans. That's what you want to invest in. You don't need to invest in a bunch of those little trinkets and little gadgets that you see on late night TV. Okay, we're also going to slice up some garlic, actually. Just slice it as thin as you can. Garlic is really to taste. I'm using about 8 cloves of garlic, so almost, you know, more than a clove per tomato, but that's just the way I like it. Okay, and then depending on if you want it hot or not, you could add some jalapenos. These are from a local farmer. It's called Abundant Harvest. And I'm just going to slice those up. And again, as I say often, if you don't want it too spicy, you can always remove the seeds and the white membrane, and that will be most of the heat of the chili, and then you'll just get the flavor from the fruity exterior walls of the chili. All right, and to that we're going to add a little bit of salt and pepper and some oil. I'm just going to put these back out on a cookie sheet and spread them out. And sometimes people like to put a little bit of sugar or honey with them, and that's just going to intensify the sweetness. If it tastes like it's a little bland, you want a little more acidity, just throw in a couple teaspoons of white vinegar, and that's going to build that nice acid that we expect to taste in a tomato. All right, these go in the oven. And when you pull them out, you've got these nice roasted tomatoes. And we're going to serve these with a little goat cheese and pompadoms. And pompadoms are an Indian cracker, and so we'll go over to the stove and I'll show you how to make those.
Okay, so it's P-U-P-P-O-D-U-M-S.
And these are made out of lentils, like lentil flour, so there's no wheat in them. And then you can see there's these little specks of black pepper. And what's really neat about these is, you know, they look kind of flat and humble right now, but we've got this hot oil over here, and you're going to see that it's going to rise up, look almost like a jellyfish growing in there.
Yeah, sure enough, it's expanding.
Gets a little crinkly, it's bubbling. And you want to cook it until all the bubbles come out and it's just sitting in the oil without bubbling. And that means that all the moisture from the lentils is cooked out of it, and that means that it'll be crispy. And then what you do is you just remove that to a paper towel. And now we've got this nice big pompadom.
Okay. It's huge compared to what it started as.
Right? So these pompadoms are nice and crunchy. You can even break them up or just serve them whole. And then we've got I've got a little bit of Judy Shad's goat cheese from Capriole Farms. Got a few of these nice tomatoes. And hopefully that's something that you're going to add to your repertoire.
Not a recipe to waste big, beautiful, juicy heirloom tomatoes on, but a great way to infuse some underripe off-season tomatoes with flavor. Check out the recipe at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Sarah Gordon, Megan Hutchison, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Mia Partlow, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology, 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Next week, it's our Valentine's Day show with local seasonal bouquets of flowers, some fancy after-dinner wine, and kale. Nothing says I love you like a bunch of kale. Hope to see you next week for that. Thanks for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan.